Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for November 18th, 2024. I'm Phil Adler. Important developments in the Ukraine war this year include Ukraine's invasion of Russia's Kursk region. Another is the subject of today's discussion, North Korea's agreement to send troops to Russia to help in its war effort. Confluence Associate Market Strategist Daniel Ortworth joins us today to discuss why investors should take notice. Daniel, this event looks pretty serious and precedent-setting. How do you characterize this mobilization of North Korean troops?
Hi, Phil. Good to talk to you again. The soldiers involved in this mobilization all come from the North Korean Army's 11th Corps, which goes by the name Storm Corps. It is considered an elite special forces group within the North Korean Army. The Storm Corps consists of 10 highly specialized infantry brigades, meaning they are foot soldiers, who are trained and equipped for unique or more challenging missions. South Korean intelligence estimates that four of these 10 brigades have been deployed to Russia in what is recognized as the first large-scale deployment of North Korean forces outside of the Korean Peninsula in the country's history. In early October, they went to bases in the Russian Far East to be trained and equipped for their roles, and later that month, they were transported to the Ukraine War Combat Zone.
Daniel, do we know anything for sure about the number of these North Korean troops?
Phil, this is proving to be a fluid number. The initial U.S. Defense Department estimate was 10,000, but South Korean intelligence estimates put the number as high as 13,000. At the time of this recording, the Pentagon has increased its estimate to somewhere between 11,000 and 12,000, and Ukrainian President Zelensky, citing his own country's intelligence, claims that all of these North Korean troops are now in the combat zone and that they have come into contact with Ukrainian forces. Adding to the uncertainty, North Korean President Kim Jong-un has said that he is willing to deploy additional troops to Russia if requested.
What do we know about the quality of these North Korean troops?
We don't know much, but we can surmise a thing or two from what we do know. Although they are considered highly trained elite troops, they come from a country whose army has not seen major combat action since the end of the Korean War in 1953. Previous training may not be all that effective. The Ukraine War has evolved since it began in ways that might cause even seasoned U.S. troops to struggle, at least at first. It is said that if they can see you, you're dead, because drone surveillance has reached the point where mobility near the lines of control are limited on both sides. Any soldier trained in, as it were, normal conflicts could be at considerable risk just by operating in ways that would usually be safe.
Well, how does the number of North Korean troops, at least the number that we're aware of, compare to the number of Ukrainian and Russian troops which are already in the field?
Phil, it is very small relative to the total number of troops. In the entire theater of war, Ukraine currently has approximately 150,000 troops committed along the front line out of its total national military potential strength of roughly 800,000. Meanwhile, Russia currently fields 500,000 of its 1.3 million active duty soldiers in Ukraine. For perspective, the entire U.S. Army troop strength is roughly 452,000. This is a very large war, and on the surface, one might not consider 10 or even 15,000 additional soldiers to mean much.
Is the presence of North Korean troops enough to tip the war decidedly in Russia's favor, perhaps leading to a ceasefire where Ukraine concedes territory?
In the scope of the entire war, I would say no. However, initial indications suggest that the North Korean contingent is being deployed in a particular place where it could make a difference. That place is the Kursk sector. Kursk is a region of Russia bordering Ukraine where, on August 6th, Ukrainian forces launched a counter-invasion into Russian territory. This is the one place in the war where the Ukrainians have taken the fight to Russian soil. Having initially gained control control of roughly 400 square miles of land, Russian counteroffenses have slowly recaptured portions of the invaded area. Ukraine initially committed roughly 30,000 soldiers to the invasion of Kursk, whilst Russia has countered with roughly 50,000, although those forces consist mostly of lower quality conscripts and reservists. Although the Kursk sector is very small relative to the broader war, it carries significance beyond its size. Ukraine could conceivably use its possession of this piece of Russian territory as leverage in future peace negotiations. If the addition of 10,000 or more fresh troops, regardless of origin, were to tip the scales, it could force the Ukraine to retreat and concede its bargaining chip.
Well, it could also lead to an escalation of this conflict. What are the military options now for Ukraine and the West?
Ukrainian leadership has persistently requested permission to use long-range strike missiles supplied by the U.S. and other NATO countries on targets deep inside Russia. Western leadership has thus far denied this permission due to the perceived escalatory nature of just such a move. Ukrainian President Zelensky is making the case that the introduction of North Korean troops to the fight is exactly the kind of escalation that justifies granting this permission. He has stated that they know every site where Russia is amassing North Korean soldiers on its territory, and that long-range strikes would enable them to preemptively attack these locations. Additionally, Ukraine could order another call-up of troops. However, Ukraine just recently announced plans to draft another 160,000 troops into its military. This decision occurred in response to Russia's continuing battlefield gains and was made well before news of the North Korean troop deployment. It comes on the background of growing resistance across Ukrainian society against additional call-ups. If the government seeks to implement another round of conscription to counter the introduction of North Korean troops, this might be a difficult move to achieve.
Daniel, do you think military options are less likely because of the results of the U.S. election?
Well, Phil, it's still really too early to say with confidence, but we do know that President-elect Donald Trump has consistently advocated a different policy on U.S. support for Ukraine than that of his predecessor, pressing for a quick ceasefire and end to the conflict. He has also called for less U.S. support and a transferal of the burden to European countries. The presence of North Korean troops, along with the fear that more may be coming, could add pressure to the Ukrainian government to conclude that they should accept a ceasefire instead of further loss of territory.
Let's look at the broader geopolitical implications. What does North Korea get out of this?
Well, on the front end, North Korea gets cash payments and much-needed food supplies in the wake of recent crop failures. But it goes much deeper than that. As North Korean troops were deploying to Ukraine, the Russian legislature, called a Duma, was voting to ratify a comprehensive strategic partnership treaty between the two countries. This mutual defense treaty obligates them to immediately provide military assistance using all means if either is attacked. This means that if South Korea or any of its allies, such as the United States, decides to take military action against North Korea, it now has to contend with the possibility that Russia will militarily intervene, a prospect made more realistic by this initial down payment of sending troops to help Russia in its current conflict. Beyond that, it is broadly expected that Russia will transfer critical technologies related to nuclear weapons, space, and ballistic missile programs.
How might South Korea seek to respond?
Well, this development has alarmed South Korea, and it has made very strong statements to that effect. Thus far, South Korea has limited itself to providing arms to the U.S. and Ukraine's neighbors, such as sales of tanks to Poland. However, it is now openly considering supplying offensive weaponry directly to the Ukraine.
Daniel, do you see this as a sign of increased cooperation within the China bloc of countries, which includes Russia, Iran, and North Korea? Or is it possible China might have some reservations about this development and more broadly its relationship with Russia?
Phil, both of those statements are true. Increasingly close ties between Russia and North Korea cause considerable discomfort for China, as it gives North Korea a counterbalance against Chinese influence. However, actions speak louder than words, and we have seen plenty of action to give evidence of closer cooperation among all four of these countries, to include between Russia and China. Since nearly the beginning of the Ukraine war, Iran has provided Russia with a constant supply of battlefield drones, and Russia has in turn supplied Iran with military helicopters and state-of-the-art air defense systems. North Korea has supplied Russia with an estimated 3 million rounds of ammunition and artillery shells for the Ukraine war. Through various arrangements, the four provide critical resources such as agricultural and petroleum products to each other, often in ways targeted to help each other evade Western economic sanctions. A key example of this is China's increased purchases of Russian and Iranian crude oil. Beyond their own purchases of Russian oil, Chinese companies have contributed the largest share of capacity to the shadow fleet of oil tankers transporting Russian oil to a range of customers outside of the Western sanctions regime. We have also seen an uptick of joint military exercises and operations among this group. The most prominent example of this occurred in July, when two Chinese and two Russian nuclear-capable bombers flew together in formation into the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone, prompting an intercept by U.S. and Canadian fighters.
Well, as for investment implications, does this event pretty much reconfirm previous confluence conclusions, including your prediction for continued fracturing of the world into blocks that will drive up inflation?
Yes, Phil, it does. We actually think it causes the fracturing trend to accelerate. To quickly summarize the expected key impacts, we expect a shrinking of the investable world, with U.S. investors taking a much more opportunistic approach to investing outside of the U.S. bloc and in the China bloc, a restructuring of commercial supply chains away from global integration in favor of local and geopolitically reliable sources, higher and more volatile inflation, which will impact both stock and bond values, and a reindustrialization of the U.S. bloc, especially in the sectors of defense, manufacturing, energy, and artificial intelligence.
Daniel, how do you expect U.S. foreign policy to evolve, and what investment opportunities might be created because of this evolution?
Phil, we have been observing an increasing reluctance on the part of the American public to support the full scope of global involvement, especially in the role of global peacekeeper that the U.S. has played since World War II. Since national security threats are increasing as a result of global fracturing, we do not envision a full-scale American retreat. Rather, we expect U.S. leadership to take an increasingly selective approach to how it engages the rest of the world and the conflicts in which it involves itself. With this degree of uncertainty surrounding U.S. support, nations will be forced to reconsider their defense requirements. This will almost certainly lead to increased foreign defense spending to hedge against this uncertainty. Among the investment implications of this recalibration of U.S. foreign policy, some countries are likely to be viewed as more important than others in the eyes of U.S. leadership, and this is further likely to translate into more commercial and business interaction, hence more investment opportunity for those countries.
Can you be specific yet about investment opportunities that you're looking at?
Not yet, Phil, especially so soon after this recent presidential election. However, we will be watching very closely, and we expect emerging opportunities such as this to be a major theme of 2025.
Thank you, Daniel. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. Also, this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.